How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, June 18, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. WWE followed up a very good pay-per-view last night with a very good Raw. We got some switches, some babyface heel switches. We got some matches for Money in the Bank, a lot of which were unexpected if you listened to the show last night. And a lot of interesting stuff going on. And Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
What did you think of the show?
I thought the show was really good.
That's right.
I think that they're overdoing this medical thing. You know, I mean, it's like between Fandango and Ziggler being legit, and then doing it for Ryback and Daniel Bryan all in the same show. It's kind of like they're taking like a really good idea that really worked with Ziggler on the pay per view, and they're almost forcing it to not work by doing it so much that they're kind of beating it to death. So it's just too much. And I mean, there's several people actually made mention to me that tonight, you know, that it's like the typical Booker thing where you find something that really works and, you know, then you do it four times the next night and it's like that, you know, that guarantees that it's not going to work for very long. But I mean, as far as the show goes, the Mark Henry thing was tremendous, you know, to build up Cena and Mark Henry. Whether that match will be tremendous is a different story, but the build was the angle that they did to set it up was great. And Brock Lesnar coming out with CM Punk. I mean, it was pretty much known that was going to happen at some point. I didn't know it was going to happen tonight. I presume that they're going to be wrestling at the Money in the Bank show and not at SummerSlam. But I'll know that for sure. I'm sure I'll know that for sure in the morning, but that's the impression that I have.
All right, well, let's get into this show. It was opened up with the Alberto Del Rio deal. Last night, if you recall, he came out after his match and he did a promo. Basically, it was an impromptu deal. I guess it wasn't into the show, and they sent him back out after he'd won the title to do this this pandering babyface promo that, of course, got booed. And tonight, moment the music hit, he was booed out of the building. So, easy heel turn.
Well, they preconditioned the people before he got out there.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's not like all those people watched the pay-per-view or anything, you know, so.
No. He came out and edited his heel promo, and he basically in 1 minute did a better job playing heel than he did in the last five full months as a babyface. And everybody hated him. The story here is that Del Rio, his explanation for all of this is he's very mad that when Dolph Ziggler cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase on him when he was hurt, everybody cheered Dolph Ziggler. Yet last night, when he took advantage of Dolph Ziggler when he was hurt, everybody booed him, and it was not fair. And
yeah, I mean, I like that the way they used that explanation. I mean, the negative on it was that he started talking about all these things that people that he, when he was a babyface, that people actually cheered and said that people booed, but I guess, you know, I guess some people probably booed some of it, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't over as a babyface, and he's better off as a heel because he wasn't over as a babyface, and there's a lot of reasons that he wasn't, but, including the nature that he was one of the worst turns in history, but, I mean, it wasn't like he was a babyface that was being booed. I mean, with the Ziggler thing, that one time, because people want to see Ziggler win the title, but it wasn't, you know, I mean, the people loved Ricardo, and they liked him, you know, they just didn't like him enough to be a main eventer, you know, but, you know, whatever. But, you know, now it's that they all booed him, I guess, during that entire babyface run when he was trying to be a babyface.
Called them pigs and cowards, and then CM Punk came out with Paul Heyman.
Yeah, I mean, he actually said, in fact, part of the thing was how, I mean, this was actually the one where when he was doing the feud with Swagger, how everyone was cheering Jack Swagger and booing him, and that never happened. I mean, Jack Swagger wasn't, you know, Jack Swagger wasn't so over as a heel, but it wasn't like anyone was cheering him.
So, Paul came out with Punk.
Because Jack Swagger was the ignorant pig that he talked about who disrespected Mexican culture. And all you people cheered him and chanted USA.
Yeah. So Paul came out with Punk, and Punk is basically challenging Del Rio to a match, and Paul grabs the mic, and Paul starts cutting a promo and talking for Punk, and Punk got very upset and basically shushed Paul down, which was first sign of the evening. He was turning babyface, and then he put over Dolph Ziggler as a man deserving of a rematch. And Paul basically said, you don't need to take this match. It's not going to be for the title anyway. Punk said he didn't care. Vicky came out and signed them to the main event match tonight. And then after the commercial break, they basically, I guess, pretty much just redid what they did last night on the website. So thank God they didn't just presume everybody watched it, where Punk basically said, listen, you're not my agent. You're just a guy. I don't want you down there at ringside. I don't need you to win matches. I'm not like Brock Lesnar, he said. And that was a some foreshadowing there. So yeah, he basically told Paul to split.
They need him, but he doesn't need Paul. They need Paul.
So they've broken up. A lot of people breaking up here on this show, in fact.
Yeah.
A lot of that. So we had Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton announced for later on in the show. They said there were going to be some stipulations fans would get to vote on. Either no DQ, no countout, or best of three falls.
Wow, that's a tough one.
Yeah. I actually thought there would be a lot of people that would vote for best of three falls. And in fact, there were.
There were some. I mean, but
30-something percent.
But usually at the house shows when they do that vote, best of three falls usually gets killed by a pretty wide margin. So it's a pretty safe bet that they weren't going to go with the majority with best of three falls, especially when the no DQ always wins.
So Wade Barrett was supposed to take on Curtis Axel, but Vicky came out and she announced that instead of this match, instead it was going to be the return of Christian. So he came back, he got a big pop, everybody chanted, welcome back. They had a match, Christian won with his finish, and that was that. He looked fine, it was his return, and not much to say about it other than that, but...
He's pretty skinny.
He's always been skinny, but yes, he is
skinny. Skinnier than usual, though. Which, I mean, then you know, I mean, he did have a shoulder injury, although he's been fine for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he came back from a shoulder injury and was smaller. Usually, guys come back from shoulder injuries and somehow are bigger.
Well, Christian doesn't have those genetics, I guess.
He actually does have pretty lousy genetics as far as for a pro wrestler body.
We had Sheamus against Team Road Scholars, which I guess Vicky had put together, an unfair match. And he ended up making a big one-man comeback, but then snuck in Sandow, schoolboyed him.
He was about to bro-kick Cody, and then Sandow snuck in and schoolboyed him.
So Sandow got his win over Sheamus here, after I thought the feud had been blown off at the pay-per-view. Apparently not.
Yeah.
Going to continue on.
Yeah, it's amazing that Sheamus went from being the chosen one to now being the working even Steven with Damian Sandow. But I guess they need a slot for him.
I got to do something with the guy.
Yeah.
So we had the results of the poll, and that was later on. I'm sorry. We had the Rob Van Dam deal where they announced he was returning at Money in the Bank. So everybody was very happy about that. Then we had a bunch of segments this evening, Triple H, Vince, and Stephanie. So Team Bricky is back there, Brad and Vicky, and Triple H is there, and they said, what do you think about the main event we signed? And Hunter said, well, it's great, but had CM Punk not come out tonight, what were you planning on doing for a main event? And they had no answer. And so he said, well...
In other words, like they're browbeating them like they're the writing team.
That's right. So Vicky's like, well, you know, but I brought back Christian tonight. And Hunter said, well, that's great, but he's been cleared for a month and a half. So then he says...
Why hasn't he been here for a month and a half? Yeah.
That's right. Then they talked about RVD, and Brad said, that was my idea. Vicky said, that was my idea. And they're both taking credit for the idea, and then Hunter admits that I called him, and I don't recall either of you being on the line. So they're all flustered and everything like that, and Triple H says, listen, you can redeem yourself here tonight by taking out the Shield. I need you to make an example out of them. I need you to make them suffer, crush them. And so that was her task for the evening from Triple H. He made sure to add, by the way, that brilliant idea tonight, booking 3MB on the show. And Brad was extremely happy, but then she alerted him that he was joking. And
yeah, actually, I liked that a lot, when the way he like was taking that seriously, and then she was being sarcastic. That was pretty clever.
We had Kane and Daniel Bryan backstage, and Bryan did not want to hear Kane talking about how he was right, since Orton and Bryan had not won the titles the night before, and Kane said, I was not going to do that. And Bryan said, listen, I need to prove myself, and I'm not going to be able to prove myself as part of a team. So no more team hell no, no more teaming with Orton. It's going to be team DB from now on. And Kane said, how fitting, you're acting like a DB. And everybody gasped at this line. And Bryan said he was going to win the WWE Championship. And Kane said, I want to win the WWE Championship as well. And so they basically agreed that they are broken up. Then we had Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan. Poll results. The no DQ match won. So they ended up having a no DQ match. It was actually pretty, it was a very good match. The big spot was Daniel Bryan missing a dive, and he began to sell his ribs. And they did a whole bunch of spots, and he did a great job selling the ribs. At one point, he tried to skin the cat, but his ribs hurt so bad he could barely do it. And when he finally got going, he got drop-kicked right in the guts and the ribs. Doctors ran over to him. They stopped the match, waved it off. Fans did not like that. Orton gave Bryan a big hug afterwards, but Bryan was greatly disappointed in himself. And he limped back up the ramp, and later they announced that he may have nerve damage, but if he doesn't, if he's able to compete, it's him and Dean Ambrose on Friday on SmackDown. I like this match.
Yeah, it was a good match. I mean, the thing is that, again, to do that finish, you know, I guess if he wrestles, the problem is now is that if he wrestles on Friday and he sells the ribs, it makes no sense because he shouldn't be cleared if he's not ready, because they're throwing this doctor and clearance stuff as part of the storyline. But if he doesn't, then it's like, why do what they did tonight? So it's I don't know.
An out for the match?
An out, I know, an out for a finish. But I mean if they were going to do something where you know, Bryan was actually hurt and out for a while and then comes back with a sympathy, you know, I like that because that's worked before. But if they weren't going to do that, I don't know. You know, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, shouldn't he be able to beat Randy Orton at some point, given that he was the one who got pinned the night before?
Maybe it's coming. I don't know. They hugged. Looks like there's more to come here.
If they hugged, that really builds up the rematch, doesn't it?
Well, something's bound to happen, I would guess.
Something is going to happen.
Let's wait and see.
Yeah, okay.
Speaking of wait and see.
Most of wait and sees don't happen.
As much as I want to wait and see with Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton, I am not excited about waiting and seeing what's going on with Stephanie. AJ came out.
Most of wait and see isn't so good. I mean, how about wait and see the resolution of the Triple H and Curtis Axel thing?
That's a long-term wait and see.
It's supposed to be tonight.
Years down the road, perhaps.
Perhaps never.
Perhaps never. Perhaps we'll be waiting. Anyway, AJ came out and did a promo. Said that Ziggler would be back very soon. Talked about how awesome she was, having won the title. Says she was going to challenge anyone in the back, and nobody came out. And suddenly, Stephanie's music played.
You know, she was really good. AJ is really good on promos. That's the one thing I think that she doesn't get the credit for that she deserves. But I think that, I don't know, like, it just felt like, you know, I mean, I know it's all about a bigger picture and everything. But Stephanie comes out there, and I know that she's got to wear high heels and all that, but does she have to? Do you know what I mean?
She looked gigantic?
Well, I mean, the whole deal was like I remember when Karen Jarrett was on put in charge of the Knockouts, and then what it did was in TNA, it made all those women look so little. And I don't think that the idea is, I mean, AJ's little, so it's okay, but she made, you know, she made everyone look little, because with the heels she was, and they all, you know, it's all about perception and everything. But I guess the perception is that the McMahons are the baddest. That's, you know, I just thought that they could have done something where, again, she isn't that much taller without the heels than the rest of them. It wouldn't be that bad. And with AJ, because AJ's gimmick is that she's small, it's kind of okay. But, you know, this did kind of look like, you know, it was, you know, Kane against Rey Mysterio almost. You know what I mean? I mean, the size difference between like a Caitlyn and an AJ is kind of okay. But with Stephanie in her heels next to AJ, I mean, it just looked like, you know, here's your champion, and she looks like she's 12 years old. You know what I'm
saying?
That's
the gimmick.
Yeah, to a point, but not to that. Not when she's a heel. When she's a babyface, yeah. But when she's a heel, I don't think she should be that much. I mean, she shouldn't be that much smaller than an executive woman. I don't think. You know, I guess, again, like, does she have to wear heels? I mean, is it like a law that a woman has to wear heels?
Well, yes, there's a dress code in WWE.
I guess. Then they should have had AJ dressed differently or something. I don't know. Although her gimmick is she's got to wear tennis shoes, so I don't know. Just I thought the size thing just made it look like it was like, you know, some, you know, mother talking to a, you know, a sixth grader.
That may be the storyline, Dave, actually. That is exactly what they did here. She came out and she chastised AJ and said she needed to start acting like a champion. And this, of course, got AJ upset. So they had a catty argument back and forth that involved AJ suggesting maybe she marry somebody. And Stephanie ended up covering the mic in such a way that everyone could still hear everything she said and threatening to fire AJ. All of the other divas came out on the ramp. Stephanie ended up going in there, and as Caitlin was starting to talk, Steph put her mic down and warned her never to interrupt her again. And apparently this is a... something happened, not involving Caitlin, apparently, but somebody interrupted Stephanie recently, and Stephanie was very upset. So apparently that played into this storyline. They turned it into an angle here on the show. And she talked down to everybody, walked off, and then Caitlin ran into the ring, attacked AJ, had apparently her nipple fall out of her top, and then Big E rescued AJ, carried her to the back. I have absolutely no idea what's going on with this whole Stephanie thing. And she just, I don't even know. It was just like, she buried all the girls.
That's
like,
what I was thinking. She buried the whole division.
Everybody. Like, yeah, you're all just girls. So shut up, I'm in charge.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like it's okay to bury prelim guys, but it's like I know the women kind of all are kind of like prelim guys. But she made like even, you know, the number one contender Caitlin and the champion AJ, you know, into prelim guys.
Just belittled everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with Caitlin, you know, cause it's one thing to belittle the heel, but she belittled the babyface too.
Yeah, she belittled everybody. All the girls were out there.
Yeah. And the rest of them just stood there like they were, you know, accoutrements, which I guess is what they really were. But that's what they, I don't know.
Yeah.
By the way, you know that Naomi and Cameron played heel tonight?
Did I know that? No.
Well, you wouldn't have known it because they did it for Superstars.
Wow.
So I don't know what that's all about.
I don't know. I know.
It may just not be about anything other than that they just told them to go out there and, because they worked with Natalia and, I don't even know who the other one was. Maybe I could, hold on. I actually should have it somewhere around here.
While you're looking at this, I'll note that I was completely unaware of this. Maybe I'm the only guy in the world, but apparently this was the first time that AJ had ever won the women's title. And
yeah.
I guess I just presume that like everybody has held that title before.
Yeah, because pretty much everybody has, but it was her first time, yeah.
How about that? After all this time she's been there and pushed so hard, this is the first time she's ever won that title. I think they would have made a bigger deal out of it. Maybe they did. I don't know. So there you go. That was the AJ segment. Very baffling to me.
Yeah.
We had Dean Ambrose and Kane.
Layla and Natalya.
Layla and Natalya.
Yeah. That's who wrestled Naomi and Cameron.
Ambrose and Kane, immediate DQ. And yes, the Shield all ran in. And no one came out to help Kane. He was left all alone and beaten up. And it was noted that Vince had told Vicky to take out the Shield, and instead the Shield had taken out Kane. So now what was she going to do? So after commercial,
the deal with the Kane thing is, you know, is if Undertaker is going to wrestle in the next several months, You know, they keep Kane working with the Shield, so it can be Undertaker and Kane against the Shield.
Sure, SummerSlam.
Yeah, if that's not a confirmed match or anything.
Yeah, we had Mark Henry meeting with his buddies. Darren Young was weeping, and they were teasing that Mark Henry was going to come out and retire. We had Shield walking around backstage. Vicky walked up. And she was very upset about their beating of Kane, their attitude. She threatened basically to fire them when Vince came up.
Well, she threatened them first, and then they were like, "Are you going to give us a timeout?" They were really mocking her something fierce.
That's right.
I mean, they pretty much made Vicky a babyface tonight.
I guess.
I mean, she was trying to stand up to the heels, except, you know, and she was certainly.
I thought they made the Shield babyfaces.
You thought they made the Shield baby faces?
More than Vicky.
Maybe.
But the point is, Vince came up, and the storyline continues that Hunter wanted the Shield taken out, and since the Shield was the ones that took out Kane, now Vince is high on the Shield.
Yeah, because he said he didn't like Kane anyway.
He congratulated them, shook their hand, said he never liked that Kane, and told them to keep it up, walked off. We had William Regal and Antonio Cesaro. Cesaro was the new Zeb Coulter charge. Zeb came out and introduced him as he's a foreigner. He speaks five languages, but the most important language he speaks is English. So Cesaro came out, obviously beat Regal quickly.
Didn't Alberto Del Rio speak English?
Sure.
Okay.
Not well enough, apparently. So he, the point is, as soon as they mentioned Cesaro, they noted he was a huge hypocrite. For choosing
Michael was going off on him being a hypocrite, and then JBL. I don't know what JBL was trying to defend at the position somehow.
So he beat Regal and hit the neutralizer, and then they had their flag, and they laid it over Regal, and this made Michael Cole lose his mind. You could not believe they put this flag on this man. There you go. Antonio Cesaro getting a push again.
Yeah.
John Cena came out. I'll bet you can guess what he said, everybody. The champ is here. He doesn't mind all of you booing him. He's going to keep fighting the good fight.
He had a crappy year last year.
Had a bad year. Now things are better. Thanks for sticking with me. Those of you that boo.
He was in the main event on every pay-per-view.
You have all the right in the world to boo. Thank you for being honest. The usual bullshit we've heard a million times. Anyway, Mark Henry came out to save the day. Had a pink suit on, which he noted, you may forget me, but you'll never forget this suit, he said. And he came out and he was crying.
You never saw Green Acres, did you?
I did actually see an occasional episode of Green Acres, believe it or not.
Okay. Because Mr. Haney used to wear suits just like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember it that well.
Yeah.
But I won't forget the suit.
Do you remember Mr. Haney? He's one of the great characters on TV in that era.
I basically just remember the theme song and I think the girl. I don't remember.
Mr. Haney was hilarious.
He was very young.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Henry comes out dressed as Mr. Haney. And he's got his pink suit. Everybody's chanting, "Thank you, Henry." One more match. They're screaming. He's in tears. He just gave this speech about how it was time to retire, and he'd won the world heavyweight title.
Brought up his kids.
Won the ECW title. He'd never won the WWE title as well. He thanked his wife. He talked about his son who loves wrestling and is always talking about it on Twitter, and his daughter who always cries when he has to leave, and John Cena threw the belt at him, and Mark Henry held it up for a while and then gave it back to him and said, "No, you got to earn this." And he gave his speech and everybody cheered and he wept and cried. And John Cena got in the ring and went to give him a big hug. And suddenly Mark Henry hoisted him up and smashed him with the world's strongest slam. Everybody went nuts. Mark Henry screamed that he still had gas left in this tank.
Everybody cheered. It was hilarious.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And he headed back up the ramp. He dusted off his Mr. Haney jacket. He threw it over his shoulder and he sauntered on up the ramp. A man who was ready to win that WWE title, which he challenged Cena for. in a backstage segment afterwards. They showed a bunch of replays. Mark Henry was so awesome in this segment. And the fans, apparently live, people were crying. And then he turned on John Cena and they went nuts. This was a great professional wrestling angle.
This was great. This was really great, yeah.
Mark Henry. What a great man. So yeah, he's headlining Money in the Bank. So it looks like Daniel Bryan is, in fact, probably going to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match. And I guess we'll have to wait till SummerSlam maybe for that match. But they did tease it when...
They did tease that they're going in that direction, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was fantastic television. I'm sure it'll be up. I doubt this will be cut from Raw on Hulu. If it is, they've lost their minds.
It won't be. There's no way.
Check it out tomorrow.
And watch them do it.
They can't.
No.
It's too great. Even Vince later admitted that he cried when Mark Henry announced he was going to retire. Mark Henry called the people puppets for believing him. This was great. Chris Jericho beat Heath Slater quick. Jericho's still doing his top rope double sledge in the lion salt, but he is clearly being very careful with, I think it's his right leg.
Code breaker.
Yeah.
He's doing the code breaker. The right knee is the bad knee, by the way.
There you go.
I did get that confirmed. But, I don't know. What would be harder on your knees, the code breaker or the, doing a double sledge off the top?
I would say the double sledge and the lion salt.
What?
I think that I know that people are noting that he's only doing the code breaker with one leg, but I think originally it was only the code breaker only utilized one leg. I think people may just now be noticing. I don't think he's doing a one-legged code breaker because his knee hurts.
Okay.
Maybe he is, but I've injured my MCL. And I could still do a code breaker, but I sure as hell wouldn't jump off the top rope.
Well, you got the same injury he has.
Yeah, and I wouldn't jump off the top rope.
What?
So he's tougher than I am.
Or?
Crazy.
Or?
Not hurt.
Oh, no. I'll talk to you about it after the show.
Alrighty. So we had Sin Cara and Curtis Axel. Curtis Axel beat him with a DDT, so he's apparently utilizing a number of different finishes now, and I don't know, not much to say about it. Curtis Axel won.
Yeah, same match that they did on SmackDown a couple weeks ago.
So then we had another segment, Team Bricky with Vince, Steph, and Hunter, and all the McMahons argued, long story short, they all want Team Bricky to only listen to each of them. Vince is in charge. Hunter's in charge. Stephanie's in charge. They all want to be in charge. They're all trying to talk him into only listening to them. This is going all summer, everybody. All summer, be ready for this. I hope it at least leads to something.
Well, it'll lead to something.
Something good.
That I can't tell you. That's a different story. But it'll lead to something.
We had Paul Heyman.
I wonder if they know where it's leading.
I'm sure they've got like a general idea, like Hunter takes over. But
well,
didn't we see that like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And Vince is back in charge.
I completely forgot it. Or remember, you know, yeah, I remember that, yeah. But then Vince just came back and he was back in charge.
Is there an angle where Mark Henry teased retirement as well a little while back? He gave like a great speech and then turned. Is that somebody else I'm thinking of?
I don't know.
It was a big show. If anybody remembers off the top of your head, email me.
Yeah.
So Punk is heading to the ring.
People have done that before. But the thing is that the other ones, they really weren't, like other people who've done that angle, have never been anywhere close to as convincing as this one.
No, I mean, he was very good.
This one was really well done.
He is great.
As far as like a, you know, most of the fake, the times that, I mean, I've seen the fake retirement thing. I mean, I've seen that, you know, I won't say 100 times, but I've probably seen it 15 times. And it's always transparent. This one really wasn't.
So Punk's heading to the ring, and Paul comes up to him, gives him a big hug, says he loves him, and off Punk goes for the match. It's Punk and Alberto Del Rio. Match was all right. I was not blown away by it.
Nothing special at all.
Just a match.
They didn't really gel, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So Punk gets GTS. Del Rio rolls outside. Ricardo helps drag him to the back. So no finish.
Well, walk out. Count out.
Yeah, cannot finish.
Yeah.
So as he's leaving, Ziggler runs out, attacks Del Rio. They have a wild brawl. People break it up, that sort of thing. So they cut back to the ring, and Punk shrugs. They announce he's the winner. They raise his hand, and suddenly Brock's music hits. And Brock comes down to the ring, circles all the way around it, jumps up on the apron, climbs inside. He asks for a microphone, gets the mic, goes face-to-face with Punk, puts the mic up to his mouth like he's about to speak, and then suddenly tosses it down, lifts up Punk. And since I still think Punk has lost like 10 pounds, maybe I'm wrong, but he's
lost some weight.
He hoists him up for that F5 and sends him out 50 feet in the air. Punk takes the big bump, acts like he's dead. Brock smiles, and I don't know. Like, they haven't even done the storyline explanation yet, but you know what it is, which is that Punk broke up with Paul, and the first thing Paul did was get an assassin on the phone to go take care of this guy. It's awesome. What a great storyline.
Yeah, but Paul will be denying it until he gets caught.
Sure. Lying. Of course.
I think. I
hope.
Yeah, that's most likely how they do it, yeah.
So it looks like, I don't know if it's going to be at Money in the Bank or at SummerSlam, but this match is coming quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was, yeah. Yeah.
A fabulous angle.
Yeah, it was well done.
This whole show. I like the idea that...
I guess I liked the whole show, but as a show, it was a great show. There were aspects of the show I didn't like, but the key stuff was really, really good.
I just love that the Paul Heyman character is a guy that... Him and Punk were so close for so long, such an evil, diabolical duo, and Punk tells him one time that you're not my agent, and so Paul's response is, I must kill this man. I must have Brock Lesnar kill him for this. What a great heel.
Yeah.
Not like a slow burn, like they're slowly breaking up over a long period of time. Paul heard one thing from this guy, his best pal, his number one guy. One thing he didn't like, and he had Brock Lesnar kill him. I think it's great. So we'll see how they play it on television. But this was a great show. All right. We got to talk about UFC in Boston. Things not looking good at the moment.
At the moment. This is one of those things that... I could easily see get settled and cooler heads prevail, but right now, because I've seen so many times where it looks like, you know, because of licensing issues, and this is essentially a licensing issue, that a show looks like it's going to fall apart, but, you know, it's just not going to be good for anyone if this show falls apart, so I think that they're going to work to resolve it, but essentially, there's a law when they legalized MMA in Massachusetts, the law was that everybody on a card has to have a social security number. And there are certain people on this card, including Shogun Hua in the main event, that don't have a social security number. And, I mean, they could work to get one, but UFC, UFC just wants to ignore it. Because there are laws, and, you know, when they put together the bylaws for Massachusetts, and I don't know if this actually went into effect or not. I know it was in the original bylaws, but one of the things was that there would be a second weigh-in, which would be like right before they went in, and you could gain like, I think it was like 10 pounds.
That's right.
And
doesn't apply to UFC.
No, in Ohio, they've let UFC just get away with not even doing it. In Massachusetts, I don't know if UFC, because UFC was, when the laws were being written, UFC was fighting to get that law off the books, you know, or the regulation off the books. And I don't remember if they succeeded or they succeeded in the sense of it's on the books, but it doesn't apply to UFC. You know, UFC can just do what they want and not have to do it. So I don't know technically, but they, you know, they were looking for something like that. And then the regulatory agency was just like, well, this is the law and we're not going to change the law. So, you know, I mean, they were supposed to have a press conference Thursday, as far as I know. Well, I mean, as of right now, the press conference has, in fact, been canceled. You know, maybe back on you know, within hours if they settle things. They're supposed to put tickets on sale relatively soon, and obviously you can't sell tickets for a show that if this issue isn't settled, and that's probably why the story just came out right now. So, I mean, I would suspect strongly that they, number one, they got to settle it pretty quick. But there's going to be a show because there's just too much of a commitment on Fox Sports Net or Fox Sports One. I mean, if somehow they can't put on a show that night, that would be something where a lot of people would be exceedingly unhappy. So, I mean, but the thing is that we're you know, what are we? We're roughly little under 9 weeks, so it's like 8.5 weeks to go for that show. So if this falls through, I think you really want the new location announced probably, you know, by the end of this week or next. So they're going to have to settle everything pretty quick or pull out and move to another location pretty quick. I suspect one or the other will happen.
I think money's involved, so they'll end up running.
I do too, because there's so much money involved in, for the thing. And also, the other thing is, if they really did keep UFC out, I could see UFC not coming back to Massachusetts for, legitimately, it's been almost 3 years since the first one. So I could see them not coming back for like 5 years, or at some point they you would want to go back to Boston, but I do expect that it'll be settled, but we'll see how it all goes.
All right, question time. This person here says, I recently watched the Buried Alive in Your House pay-per-view from 1996. One of the notorious events on the show involved Jim Ross's commentary headset not working. He seemed visibly irritated by it, only called the first two matches, which was then followed by a promo and him leaving for the night. Were there legitimate headset issues, or was it part of a storyline?
Wasn't that part of a storyline with Jim Ross against Vince? Was that the year that they did that storyline?
96 may have been.
I don't remember.
Seems like a long time ago to have done that storyline. That would have been before the Mr. McMahon character and everything.
Yeah, no. But they did the when Jim Ross turned heel to feud with and brought in the big
that's
and
the fake Razor and Diesel. That would have been 96.
Yeah,
that was what happened.
Yeah.
All righty. After Sunday's great pay per view, where would you rank the Allstate Arena Rosemont Horizon in wrestling's great venues?
That's great venues is a hard question. It's a great crowd. And as far as Chicago as a city, Chicago as a city in North America would always have been near the top. I mean, very, very close to the top. It's always, because there were periods it was down as well. But generally speaking, I mean, it was the first city to have the monster crowd with Gotch and Hackenschmidt, with both of them. So it's the first, city to, really do numbers at that level. And it did a lot of ballpark shows over the years, all through. It did, they probably did more, like, ballpark shows in Chicago than anywhere, I think. Because Vern did them every couple of years. Vern did several of them. He did the one in 70, he did another one in, like, 72 or so, and then... another one a couple of years later, maybe even two more. Obviously O'Connor Rogers was, I think there was one in the 30s they did. But as far as the Allstate Arena, somewhat modern arenas, I mean, it would have to be up there, sure, near the top. I mean, but that's WWE history. And I know Crockett, Crockett ran a couple of times in that building before he lost the rights to the building, or however that thing politically, happened, that he ended up going to UIC. But I do remember them doing a couple of shows there. But like nobody, it's relatively recent. Chicago with the, I don't remember when the building was booked, but Chicago was, going into the, I don't know when the amphitheater was up, but certainly in the 50s, they were running the amphitheater with the Buddy Rogers era. In the 60s, in the 70s, you know, still the amphitheater as the main venue. So it doesn't have the historical legs of a Madison Square Garden or a Kiel Auditorium or the Cow Palace or something like that. But, yeah. I mean, if you know, a lot of those historical arenas also, you know, have been torn down. So of the modern buildings, it's probably up there.
Person says, I want to know if Dave feels the top WWE talent, such as Steph, Vince, Hunter, Jericho, Cena, Orton, Punk, etc., as well as top management, recognize or have knowledge or even watch matches of overseas talent such as Prince Devitt, Karl Anderson, Okada, Tanahashi. I would assume Punk is aware of them, but just wonder if they are over on WWE talents and management radar at all. And
you know, Okada, you know, they were interested in Okada. I'm sure that there's an awareness, and I'm not saying from Vince necessarily. I would doubt that Vince knows who any of these guys are. Hunter probably. I don't know what Hunter knows now. I know that a couple of years ago he didn't know anyone, you know, except for, you know, and he didn't know one from Japan except for Muto. He may know more now. I don't know what he knows. Stephanie, I would seriously doubt knows anyone. But I mean, there's people in the company who do. You know, I mean, they're aware of, you know, different people like that. I mean, Carl Anderson's had, you know, several offers to come over. Just as an example, I would be shocked if Devitt never has had an offer to come over. No one's ever told me he has, but I'd be shocked if he didn't. It would make, you know, it's not like he's this secret or anything. You know, people know about him. I mean, I'm not saying that Vince does, but that's not Vince's job. You know, Vince isn't the guy out there recruiting talent.
All right, this person here says, I've been watching some WWE DVDs that feature luchador matches from WCW. Reminded me of how ridiculously fun and over La Parca, L.A. Park, was when he was there. I was wondering what you think he could have achieved if they've gotten behind him. Do you think TNA could have had success with bringing him in?
You know, a lot of those guys could have done really, really well. You know, I mean, we talked about when Hector Garza passed away. I mean, you know, they could have done, you know, I don't know how big of a superstar Hector Garza could have been, but I do know he could have been a lot bigger than he was in the United States because he had a lot of, you know, he had a talent look and all that. Parca, I mean, for a guy who literally always got beat, Parca was really over in WCW, I mean, as far as crowd reactions went. Just because of his comedy and everything like that. I mean, Parca could have been a big deal, for sure. With you know, the people want him to be a deal with no push, so if he had, like, a big push, I think he could have been a pretty darn big deal, because he's a super charismatic guy. And his charisma, you know, I mean, you know, I saw him in Mexico. His charisma had nothing to do with being Mexican, because it's just a guy in a freaking skeleton mask, and it was never about his promos anyway. It was all about his comedy and all that, and that translates into almost any language. The thing, you know, depending on the time, I mean, I know that there was a lot of people who were, I know, you know, and I don't remember if WCW was like, well, there was a point where they were, you know, they kind of got mad at him for his weight and things like that. They thought he was too fat. But, you know, in that costume, you know, I don't think people really noticed that. So, but yeah, Parker could have, you know, I'm not saying that Parker could have been, you know, I don't know how big he could have been. I mean, he could have been way, way bigger than he was, and he could be reasonably big, but top tier big. You know, it's hard to say for sure. I mean, if he was pushed as a top tier guy, could he have hung at that level? I think so. I don't think he would have been a flop, but you know, obviously you never know unless you're, you know, given that opportunity, and he absolutely wasn't.
All right, one more here. This person says, have you heard anything about the progress of Memo Montenegro? Whatever is that?
Montenegro?
Del Rio's brother.
Yeah, the other Rodriguez brother. I mean, he started with you know, I mean, not at square one, but almost square one, like square two. I mean, he had very, very little training when he got there, and he was way behind, you know. I mean, he would have been ahead of the football players that don't know what, you know, that didn't know anything. But those were the only guys he was ahead of. And I mean, I don't know as far as, I mean, he hasn't been on NXT TV that much.
Apparently they added him to the roster on the website.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the deal, I mean, the guys who are good, I hear about all the time. And the other guys that I don't hear about, I am presuming are guys who are not going to be called up anytime soon. So he would fit in that category unless there's some, you know, something that pops up like with Sakamoto where they, you know, I never heard about Sakamoto until Tenzai came, but, you know, it was kind of like something or, you know, it's like a role opens up or something for you. And I suppose that could happen with him in some form. But as a, you know, the idea of him coming in as a wrestler in WWE right now, I mean, I would be very surprised just because, you know, it's not, there are names you hear, you know, that are there. I mean, the one that people are talking about now is Adrian Neville. Trying to think who else. He's probably more than almost anyone. You know, Sami Zayn is another one that they're very high on. Who else? But I mean, Mel Montenegro's not on that list of anything they've ever heard.
All right, everybody. Speaking of Chicago, tomorrow, Colt Cabana is going to be on the show. Dave and I will be talking to him about international travels and a lot of different stuff. If you haven't checked him out on Colt's podcast, Dave is up there. And very good show, so make sure you head up there and check that out. New back issue of The Observer is coming up. New Figure 4 and Observer is coming up as well, and lots of radio shows. So check it all out, everybody, and we shall talk to you again after a while.